Hello, and welcome to ExoLore, the show that helps you imagine other worlds, but with facts and science. I'm your host, Moya McTeer, here to share my knowledge of astrophysics and folklore with you. In today's episode, we're talking about HBO Max's original series, Raised by Wolves. And I say we, but it's just me today, speaking into the dark void that is my microphone and reveling in the fact that no one can see the silly faces I make while I do it. Like there, just made a silly face, and you have no idea, because this isn't video. But this episode isn't necessarily a review of Raised by Wolves. Instead, think of it more as a delayed and thought-out reaction episode, because I sure had a lot of reactions while watching the show, and I needed some time to make sense of them. First, let me tell you about the show. Raised by Wolves is a science fiction show created by Aaron Guzikowski and executive produced by Ridley Scott. Yes, that Ridley Scott, who directed Alien, Blade Runner, and my favorite commercial slash video ever, The Seven Worlds of Hennessy XO.
And this is more, not so much advertising, it's really entertainment. And therefore, it's almost parallel with it being a movie.
Also, I know it might be weird that my favorite video on the internet is an ad for an alcohol that I don't even drink, but trust me, it's gorgeous. You're going to love it. But this episode isn't about Ridley or his alcohol-themed masterpiece. It's about Raised by Wolves, which is set sometime in the 22nd century, after Earth has been rendered pretty much uninhabitable by a war between atheists and a religious sect called the Mithraics. Mithraics? There's an I in there, but it's small. It gets swallowed up when they say it on the show. In a last-ditch effort to secure the future of humanity, an atheist rebel sent two androids named Mother and Father, super creative dude, to the planet Kepler-22b with a bunch of frozen embryos and the means to incubate them once they get there. The events of the show mostly take place 10 years after Mother and Father have arrived on their destination planet, when a huge ship full of Mithraics has crash-landed on the surface. And, of course, both sides continue to fight the same religious war that they literally left Earth and traveled a quadrillion miles to escape. The show explores the themes of what it means to be human, what it means to be a parent, and what it means to believe in something besides yourself. And I think the show does an okay job at that. But the show does not explore anything about science, at least not to my satisfaction. When I heard that there was a sci-fi show set on an actual exoplanet, Kepler-22b, I got so excited. The science fiction novel that I wrote in college was also set on a real exoplanet, one that I studied, and I let the science inform my world building. And I really, really wanted to see a high-budget sci-fi show that did the same. But that's not what this show is. Ridley Scott and the rest of the Raised by Wolves team treat science as a suggestion, which is totally valid as a choice in fictional world building. It is absolutely not valid as a choice in the real world. Please listen to scientists and wear a damn mask. It's that easy. Just wear a mask. I'm probably preaching to the choir here. I know that. I am going to talk about some of the world-building choices that the showrunners did make, but first, I have to do the work of separating fact from fiction in this imagined world, because it's my duty as a science communicator to make sure you know the truth, and it's also my duty as a world builder to help you appreciate the hard work that went into making this show. All right, so let's start with separating fact from fiction. Obviously, I have to start with the planet that they chose as the setting for this show, Kepler-22b. And I genuinely don't understand why the showrunners decided to use an actual planet as the setting for their show if they didn't also intend to accurately represent the planet. Did they think using an official name would trick viewers into thinking the show was more sciencey than it was? Is that what they were going for? I don't want to assume any shadiness on their part, but like, it's literally free to make up your own alien world without bringing the NASA Exoplanet Archive into it. And I want to make it clear that I'm not upset that they poorly represented the planet. I'm not, like, angry. But I do think fiction is so much more satisfying when the plot and characters' actions are informed by the planet's physical characteristics. So let me tell you some of Kepler-22b's characteristics, and also how the show got it wrong. Kepler-22b was discovered in 2011 and was the first planet found by the Kepler telescope in the habitable zone of its star. And I really, really wish that we would start calling it something else, because being in the habitable zone of a star doesn't actually guarantee that a planet is habitable. Those calculations are just based on things like the star's temperature and the distance between the star and the planet. They don't account for the planet's atmosphere, how reflective its surface is, or any internal mechanisms like volcanism or plate tectonics or tiny little magical fire beetles who live in the middle and fart fire. Like that, none of those things are accounted for in these equations. In fact, with our current technology, we can't even learn enough about conditions on a planet's surface to determine whether or not it's habitable. So the next time you see a headline that claims to have found a habitable or Earth-like planet, God, my advisor hates when people say that something is Earth-like. The next time that happens, I really hope you hear my voice in the back of your mind saying, but is it really habitable though? All right. Back to Kepler-22b. It orbits a star that's just a bit smaller and dimmer than our sun, but it's not too different. The planet is about 2.4 times bigger than Earth, and by that I mean its radius is about 2.4 times Earth's radius. The volume would be about 14 times Earth's volume, because volume increases with radius cubed. That's the kind of fun math that I've had to do in way more homework sets than I can count. And remember, a planet's radius is separate from its mass. Kepler-22b, even though it's only about 2.5 times bigger than Earth, is actually about 36 times more massive, which puts it squarely in big boy planet territory. So how does this compare to the planet in Raised by Wolves? Well, the biggest difference is that based on its size and mass, the real Kepler-22b is probably more like Neptune than it is like Earth. But you know, let's suspend all of that. Even if Kepler-22b were actually rocky, because sometimes surprising things happen, gravity on Kepler-22b would be about 6 times stronger on the planet's surface than it is here on the surface of Earth. And it really didn't look like the characters in Raised by Wolves spent any time adjusting to their new gravity. Travis Fimmel, the absolute snack of a man who plays Marcus in Raised by Wolves, weighs about 190 pounds here on Earth. So he would weigh about 1,140 pounds on Kepler-22b. And yes, Travis Fimmel could probably squat me on Earth without breaking a sweat, and he would look, oh, damn fine doing it. But I have a hard time imagining that he could carry 1,000 extra pounds across an alien desert without looking like he's trying. Nah. Speaking of muscles, let's talk about that 13-year journey the Mithraics took from Earth to fake Kepler-22b in the show. Astronauts on the International Space Station exercise for about 2 hours every day to prevent their muscles from atrophying. That's right, they're scientists and they're jocks. They're beefy. They do a lot of exercise. I'm assuming that if the Mithraics had the technology to create a shared virtual simulation, you know, in addition to creating a giant spaceship that can travel across the galaxy, that they have the ability to keep a person's muscles from deteriorating during the trip. And I'm willing to suspend that disbelief. I'm also willing to suspend my disbelief of faster than light travel, because the real Kepler-22b is more than 600 light years away from Earth. But how did they get there? Did the Mithraics use a warp drive? A wormhole? An infinite probability drive that lets them choose a location from an infinite set of probable choices?
As the improbability drive reaches infinite improbability, it passes through every conceivable point in every conceivable universe almost simultaneously. In other words, you're never sure where you'll end up or even what species you'll be when you get there.
Maybe the showrunners know how the Mithraics arc made the trip, but they didn't share that knowledge with us, which is super annoying. Once the travelers, Mithraic and android alike, arrived on Kepler-22b in the show, they seemed to encounter a world that was conveniently similar to Earth. It was an acceptable temperature with a breathable atmosphere. It had 3 moons that somehow were always visible together in the same part of the sky. And yeah, I'm sure they scoped this world out with their obviously advanced technology before they left Earth, but it's all just so convenient. The days and nights on the show's version of fake Kepler-22b even seem to align with the human circadian rhythms. And seriously, what are the chances that this planet rotates at the same rate as Earth? I'll tell you, the chances are extremely low. Just looking at our own solar system, you can see a huge range of rotation periods. Jupiter, the biggest, beefiest planet in our solar system, takes just 10 hours to rotate. 10! Do you have any idea how big Jupiter is? It's huge! You can fit like 1,000 Earths inside Jupiter, and it only takes 10 hours to rotate, which always blows my mind. And Venus, on the other hand, which is about the same size as Earth, takes nearly 150 Earth days for Venus to complete one rotation. All right, so let's suspend even that disbelief. And I should tell you that at this point, the hanging basket in my mind is now filled to the brim with disbelief. But let's say that the show's planet miraculously has a 24-hour day. Because the planet, well, the real Kepler-22b anyway, it's so much bigger than Earth, it has to rotate faster to travel the extra distance in the same amount of time. If you remember from the last episode, The World of Partying Birds, that increased rotation speed creates some issues, especially around the equator. So even if the characters in Raised by Wolves did make it to the tropical zone like they wanted, they'd be in for a rude awakening. With all these examples of science being ignored, and not just even stretched, it's pretty clear that the world building in Raised by Wolves wasn't based on science. I couldn't even find mention of a science advisor working on the show, which, by the way, putting this out into the universe, I am very down to be your science advisor. If you want someone who knows about space and how to build a fictional world, I'm your girl. So what world building did the Raised by Wolves team do? We're going to get to that, but first, a message from my sponsors. Well, it's me reading something that I wrote on behalf of these sponsors, but you should listen anyway. My world building process is all based on facts. That's why it's important for me to know things like, centrifugal force can offset gravity at the equator of a rotating sphere, and planets closer to their stars orbit faster to overcome the star's gravity because the force gets weaker with increased distance. If you want to learn those kinds of science and math concepts and how they relate to each other, but without memorizing equations, might I recommend Brilliant? Brilliant uses storytelling and interactive games to teach you the science and math concepts that I use when I build worlds. And believe me, learning this stuff on Brilliant is way more fun than learning it in a classroom. They have more than 60 different courses in subjects like gravitational physics, chemical reactions, and logic. Psst, that's more courses than I took to graduate from Harvard. To up your facts-based world-building game, go to brilliant.org/exolore and sign up for free access to their educational games and puzzles. And if you want even more Brilliant features, the first 200 people who go to that link will get 20% off the annual premium subscription. Honestly, I think most of the world building for this show was spent imagining what Earth must have been like before the Mithraics left it. The show takes place sometime in the 22nd century, so they had to imagine what a future religious war might look like. The special killer robots that the Mithraics developed and named Necromancers was a nice touch, in my opinion. But it goes deeper than that. The Raised by Wolves showrunners left several hints that the Earth in the show isn't just our Earth, but with a scary apocalyptic future. They implied that it also had an alternative past. One of the sacred relics that the Mithraics brought from apparently alternate Earth to the fake Kepler-22b is Romulus's tooth. Now, they don't explicitly say that the tooth in question is from the same Romulus who, according to legend, founded Rome. Scholars actually debate the accuracy of this myth, by the way. And it is possible that Romulus was a pretty common name, especially on this alternate Earth, and that the sacred tooth relic didn't belong to the ancient mythical figure. But I think the title of the show gives us a clue here. While I was watching it, I couldn't figure out why the show was called Raised by Wolves. It wasn't until I started preparing this episode and remembered Romulus's tooth as the relic that they show on screen that I realized the connection. But first, I have to tell you the rest of Romulus's story. According to this oft-disputed myth, Romulus and Remus were the twin grandsons of an ancient dethroned king. In classic fashion, the usurper king demanded that the boys be killed because they posed a threat to his rule, but their mother saved them by, of course, leaving them next to a river. If this sounds familiar to you, it's because this kind of thing happened all the time in classical mythology. The titan Cronos ate his children to prevent them from overthrowing him until his sister slash baby mama Rhea hid their son Zeus away. Moses' mother, yeah, that Moses, hid him in a basket to save him from being killed by the pharaoh's decree. And Oedipus, of Greek literary and 19th century psychoanalysis fame, was cast from his home because of a prophecy that he would kill his father and marry his mother, which, of course, he eventually did. But back to Romulus and Remus. After being abandoned by the river, they were saved by a river god, which, you know, was very lucky for them, and nursed back to health by a wolf. All of the myths that I read specified that it was a she-wolf who suckled the twins, but is that really necessary? Is there anyone out there who thinks a he-wolf suckled the tiny babies? That makes no sense. Those nipples are useless. And that's just science. When the twins were older, they decided to build a city of their own, but couldn't agree on which hill to build it on. So naturally, Romulus killed his brother and founded Rome on the hill he wanted, damn it. Interestingly, archaeologists found a sarcophagus buried underneath the Roman Forum earlier this year that they think might be Romulus's holy burial site. There was no body, though, which indicates that it was more of a symbolic site than an actual grave. And historians don't even agree that Romulus and Remus were real. One archaeologist called the tomb, quote, a place of memory where the cult of Romulus was celebrated. So not actually his grave where his body was supposed to be, but just something for people who believed in him, to a place for them to celebrate and practice their belief, I guess. But still, that story of two boys being raised by a creature who isn't supposed to know how to nurture, that's the story of Raised by Wolves. But instead of a wolf, it's a killer robot. So, you know, there's that difference. And I think that this is absolutely amazing world building, to be totally honest with you. The seemingly small and insignificant decision to use Romulus's tooth as the on-screen relic ties this futuristic sci-fi story to an ancient myth in a really satisfying way. It also gives us a peek into the alternative history on Earth by implying that the Mithraic religion goes back to at least the 8th century BCE, which is when Rome was founded. At the same time, hearkening back to a popular but potentially less familiar myth also provides clues about where the show might be going next. Now, I'm just wildly speculating here, but Raised by Wolves does have two young orphan boys who could each fulfill the requirements of an old Mithraic prophecy about establishing a utopic city. So I would definitely not be surprised to see Paul and Campion pitted against each other in a really gruesome way in future seasons. If there's a betting pool about what's going to happen in the future seasons of the show, I'd like to get in on that. The showrunners also did some world building to add a dangerous past to this fake Kepler-22b. They added in giant snake creatures who leave behind some very creepy skeletons. They imagine that there must have been some kind of rudimentary civilization that planted crops in intentional patterns. And they even imagined that on this world, devolution exists. And while I don't think it's fair to assume that humans are the peak of the evolutionary journey and that any further developments are actually, you know, backwards progress, but I do admire the showrunner's boldness in introducing the possibility. Yeah, I really do. But it does seem like most of the world-building effort went into building out the Mithraic religion, complete with beliefs, rituals, and historical figures. Because at the end of the day, good world-building doesn't have to mean imagining a whole world from scratch in vivid detail. Good world-building can mean focusing on one new aspect of a world and really exploring all the consequences of that one change. When I teach fictional world-building, I describe this method of building a fictional world as tracing the ripples, as if one change, that one change that you introduce, is a pebble that creates waves on a pond surface. Next, we're going to do a segment that I call Quick Questions, where I ask and don't answer questions that the show left unanswered. But before that, a message from one of my other sponsors. The other day, I was on a Zoom call and I said, "Nerds are my favorite people," without thinking, but then I realized it's true. Nerds are my favorite people. And if you, dear listener, are the type of nerd who wants a thematically appropriate bag to hold your custom D&D dice, then you need to check out Inked Gaming. They make customizing your gaming gear quick and easy. Plus, they have a really cute little octopus mascot named Kai. And if you want to learn more about Kai, Inked Gaming, or all the awesome gear they have, head on over to inkedgaming.com slash EXOLORE. And then you can use the code EXOLORE, all caps, I don't know if that matters, to get 10% off your whole purchase. But their prices are already pretty reasonable to begin with. You can also join their membership program called The Consortium, which sounds super mysterious, for exclusive access to upcoming Black Friday deals. And Black Friday's getting real close, y'all. Anyway, go to inkedgaming.com/exolore and use the code EXOLORE to get 10% off some dope gaming gear. All right, it's time for quick questions, where I read off a list of questions that I wrote down while I was watching the show that the show then did not answer. Quick question. How did they expect a bunch of children raised together to overcome the sibling obstacle and populate the planet? I know that the atheist rebel who created this plan was a hacker genius and not necessarily a psychology genius or a biology genius, but, like, shouldn't he have known that the kids wouldn't want to have babies with each other if they were raised together? I don't know. This just seems like a faulty plan. Quick question. Many of the Mithraics wear their hair in a pseudo-mullet style, and I just really want to know, is that a religious thing? Is it functional? Is it just the hairstyle that got popular during the war? Like, I really need to know this. Quick question. Why did they make the holy site in the desert look like a butthole made out of rocks? I mean, seriously, look at it. Is a pentagonal prism a thing? But it's that, but with a butthole in it. Like, you know those people who are really into drawing cat buttholes? I think that when they were designing this holy site for the show, they got one of those people to design it, because I know I'm saying butthole a lot, but it just really looks like an anus. Quick question. Why did the characters continue to kill each other when, as far as they knew, they were the last, like, 20 humans alive in the universe? I mean, I know the answer is, like, religion or tribalism or old habits die hard, but it's so frustrating that they didn't even make an effort to adapt their morals to their new context. Quick question. Why are all the depictions of motherhood in the show so painful and violent? Are the showrunners okay? No, seriously, are they okay? Because none of the mothers in the show seem like they're okay with the whole situation, and I just want to know what's going on there. Quick question. What is Tempest putting in her hair to make it look that good? I tweeted this, but I didn't get any satisfactory answer, so I'm including it here. Are they making their own conditioner and moisturizer out of the radioactive crops in their settlement? Because otherwise, there's just no way that Tempest's hair would look that good. For those of you who don't know what it takes to care for natural or textured or curly hair, please know that this is where the show really broke down for me. Natural curly hair requires more maintenance than straight hair for a couple of reasons. One, the curls make it easier for the hair to get tangled, and sometimes that's what you want, but if that's not what you're going for, it can be painful and frustrating. Believe me, I've shed so many tears in the shower while trying to detangle my hair. Trying and failing, I might add. It's really hard to brush this. The second reason that natural hair requires more maintenance is that the kinks and curls in natural hair make it difficult for the moisturizing oils from your scalp to make their way down the hair strand. Without moisture, hair gets weak and brittle, so it breaks, and people with natural hair have to manually provide moisture to our strands. Anyway, all of that is to say that natural hair is beautiful, but it requires maintenance to look as good as Tempest does. And this got me thinking about the show's writers, because any Black person, and I mean any Black person, could have pointed this out in the writer's room and suggested realistic ways for people on this world to care for their natural hair. Without access to moisturizers, Tempest could have cut her hair short or put it in a protective style like braids or dreadlocks. But no. Instead, we're left to suspend our disbelief even more, which is something we've had to do a lot in this show, and go along with the idea that mother and father were programmed to deal with any issue except for dealing with Black hair. Nah, fuck that. Hairstylists who only know how to do white people's hair shouldn't get a pass at that here on Earth, and nurturing androids shouldn't get to ignore Black hair on a distant alien planet. Also, in case you were wondering, yes, all the writers of this show are white. I'm sorry if that got a little aggressive. I just have a lot of really strong opinions about hair, and I'm so sick and tired of media treating Black hair like it's something scary, like it's something they can't deal with. I'm really angry at the fact that every single time I've gone for an interview on TV, the stylist didn't know how to do my hair. Like they looked at it and I could see the fear in their eyes. And that's not a good feeling, folks. So that's why I brought it up. So what do I think of Raised by Wolves? Well, I think they did a good job of sneakily adapting an ancient myth to a new genre and environment. I'm impressed by how well thought out the Mithraic religion is because I know how hard it can be to create a fictional religion without it feeling too similar to something that people already believe. And I'm sure they have many documents outlining the Mithraic customs, and I would absolutely love to see them. I know it's not going to happen, but I'm going to put that out there anyway. The show's also visually stunning, but I would expect nothing less from Ridley Scott and the South African countryside where most of the show was filmed. But if you want to watch a sci-fi show that actually uses science to inspire its fiction, I would not recommend watching this show. If you're anything like me, you're just going to spend 10 long hours being annoyed that they clearly know nothing about the actual planet that they claim to set their story on. What do you think of the show? Let me know by tweeting your thoughts at ExoLorePod. That's ExoLorePod. Do you want to start a creative project but need a little help getting the juices flowing? Here's a prompt. What other sacred relics besides Romulus's tooth do you think the Mithraics would have taken with them to the fake Kepler-22b? Whether it's through words, sketches, or song, tell a story of why that artifact is so important. If you're comfortable, share your work on Twitter or Instagram and tag ExoLorePod or email it to exolorepod@gmail.com. If you want to support my worldbuilding work, there are a couple ways you can do that. The first is to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. It's free and it does make a difference. Second, you can support me on Patreon. Your monthly support would help me do things like pay my guests and hire an editor, which I'm actually doing for the next episode. So thanks for that. If you want to join that support crew, please head on over to patreon.com/goastromo. And that's if you're able. I know that times are hard right now. If you like this episode, be sure to share it with your friends and subscribe to the show on whatever platform you're currently using or prefer to use. And that way, you can catch me next time on another world.